It's time for Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, another edition of the Sound Mind broadcast with Daniel Pryor. Hello there, Mr. Pryor.
Hello, Mark.
Good to see you once again. Hey, yeah. This week, communication, but not the normal look at communication, using your head in communication. People are always encouraged to speak from the heart, but maybe it's better to speak from the head a little bit more, too.
Yeah, well, what I want to try to do today is kind of synthesize a few things we've talked about before, communication tools. And then a couple weeks ago, we did a couple of talks on just a little bit about how the brain works. And I'm not quite sure how clear that was to people, but I want to try to synthesize a couple of those things and see if we can get even better at communication.
Okay.
So I'm going to start off, and of course, you have to use these things, these tools. They work well if you use them. It's sometimes difficult to remember to use them, but I think we try and get better at it. Now, when we want to communicate, or we need to communicate, and particularly to, let's say, a less receptive audience. So you can imagine this would be a spouse or a family member, or it could apply to friendships or even any kind of communication situation, actually.
But when they're being less receptive, you mean?
Yeah.
You know, a spouse
yeah.
and a family is usually
sure.
less receptive.
Well, of course, I'm a marriage counselor, and so a lot of the impetus for this program is what I see in marriage, couples trying to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a less than receptive audience, and so you have to relay your message in such a way that it will be, you know, fairly considered or weighed. You want the message to get through so the other person will contemplate it at the very least. So a big part of that is the ability to craft your message so that it's going to be understood by that audience. So in doing that, we're going to use these familiar communication tools that we've talked about before. So my list of effective communication tools begins with self-analysis. What is my motive? We ask ourselves questions. So I'm going to have this conversation. I'm going to talk to my wife about a topic that possibly we don't see eye to eye on. And it's one of those things that maybe one of the first things I ask in self-analysis is, do I have to have this conversation? You know, what's my motive? Do I really need to say this? Mm-hmm. What's my real expectation, outcome expectation? Am I being realistic? Am I being thoughtful? Am I being respectful? Why am I so emotional about this? And could I possibly be wrong? Questions like that. So I'm questioning my beliefs. I'm questioning my reality. Next, I consider timing. Is the timing right? Not only for me, is it convenient for me, but is a good time for the other person to be receptive. Thirdly, what are the best words I can use to get my message across clearly? I don't want to use rhetorical questions or innuendo or things like that. I want to use correct words that will get my message across clearly. And then what tone of voice is going to be the most efficient? Should I be shouting? Should I be growling? Should I have a softer voice? What's going to be congruent with my message and get my message across? Fifthly, what facial expression is best going to ensure that my message is received? If I look angry, is that going to help out? Usually no.
Rolling the eyes, that's
rolling
not a good
eyes,
one.
Yeah. Lastly, what body posture will be congruent with my message? So all these things have to coordinate. You know, you can't say, shout at the top of my voice. I have a stick in my hand. I'm shouting. I'm listening to you. You're not listening. All these things have to be congruent, timing, tone of voice, words, facial expression, body posture. To some degree, what we're always up against when we're communicating with an unreceptive listener is the defense mechanisms. That is, beliefs about personal safety and security, not just with regard to physical safety and security, but more often with regard to safety and security of the self. Now, these beliefs that we're up against, they're held in the circuitry of the brain. Now, let's think about the frontal cortex of the brain as a library, and that stores your history and your reality, your beliefs. information is constantly traveling through the brain via numerous neural circuits. So information rivers and tributaries, these neural pathways connect all the sensory information with various glands and brain regions. The result is a complex neural narrative that involves memories tied to emotions. All of this information, new information that comes in through the sensory and old information that's been there and been reinforced over the years, it continually passes through the library where it is constantly fact-checked against a believed reality, and it's either affirmed, synthesized, or it's rejected. And so that, in a nutshell, is your mental defense mechanism.
Okay.
Okay. Now, when you have a discussion or an argument with the person, you're trying to get through their defense mechanism and they're trying to get through yours. So getting through this defense mechanism is essential to a mutual understanding. Now, I talk about communication in terms of coding and decoding. So in communication, using the tools that we've talked about here, you're attempting to do two things. You're trying to either to code your message in such a way that it can't be misunderstood. So you use these tools and they're congruent with your message so that your message can't be misunderstood. And you're trying to decode the other person's message in such a way that it has not been misunderstood. So that's fundamental. Of course, I don't really have control over whether that person understands my message. I can just do the very best to help them understand that I need to get the message across to them in such a way that I don't get in my own way. I don't, my tone of voice, my words, my facial expression, body language, these things aren't getting in the way of my message. I'm doing the very best that I can to code my message in such a way that that other person can't misunderstand it. They can misunderstand it because what I say has to go through a screen of their reality and they're going to interpret it a certain way. That's partly their defense mechanism. Mm. Or when they're coding message and sending it to me, even if they're doing a bad job of coding their message, maybe they're shouting or they have a scowl on their face or something, I'm trying to look past the bad coding and actually see what is the important message that they're trying to get across. And you find that if you communicate in those ways and you get good at it, you can de-arm, you can de-escalate an argument pretty quickly. So ultimately, you're trying to comprehend and appeal to that other person's believed reality, that is, about their safety and their security. It might seem a little overstated, but a topic doesn't have to be about me to threaten my sense of security and safety. Think of all the conversations that we have about politics that don't directly have to do with me, but they have to do with my sense of security and safety. What about conversations about faith? What about a conversation about where we should have a vacation? How can something like that actually feel like it threatens my safety and security? Well, say I want to go to Hawaii and my wife wants to go to Florida and we're going back and forth. Going to Florida, I don't want to go there. So that question, if she prevails in this argument, that's going to bring into question my feeling of my personal value, my personal control, and my power. And of course, we've talked before about life perspectives and how value, control, and power are things that are very meaningful to us in our sense of safety and security. So just about any conversation, when you get into it, if there's any kind of a confrontation or an argument or a parting of ways or a difference of opinion, it's going to have something to do with that defense mechanism, safety and security. So we're trying to comprehend that other person's believed reality. In other words, any productive discussion that's going to end amicably or in agreement is going to require some degree of vulnerability. I'm going to have to relax my defense mechanisms. I'm going to have to relax on some of my hard-held beliefs. I'm not talking about faith beliefs necessarily, but we're talking about safety and security. So beliefs about how important I have to be, how, do I have to be right, those kinds of things.
Yeah, having to be right seems to be a real roadblock for a lot of people.
Yeah. And it gets to that sense of, you know, it touches on our sense, or it reminds us that we're mortal. And, you know, we could tie a lot of things in here and go on forever. It touches shame. It touches that sense of need for value, control, and power. So,
and also trying to, having to fix something. I need to fix this. You know, I need to fix you. I need to fix the
situation. But I don't like to be fixed.
But I don't want to be fixed.
Right.
Why don't you just listen to me?
Yeah. Well, that gets back to the self-analysis, too. You know, when we start into the conversation, we want to do our best at looking at, you know, what is my real expectation? Am I just trying to pick a fight and win one? Or am I actually trying to, are we actually trying to have communion here, you know? So it's going to require a degree of vulnerability. And so you have to deal with defense mechanisms. Now, to succeed in dealing with those defense mechanisms, you're going to have to engage the other person. My wife is going to have to engage me in such a way that it solicits positive emotions. I don't necessarily mean joy and enthusiasm, but calm, safety, and security. Or they either have to solicit those kind of emotions or at least be associated with those kinds of emotions. So people are much less likely to consider a different viewpoint if that viewpoint or those viewpoints are delivered in such a way that they associate with negative emotions. So now we think back about the tools, the facial expression, the body language, the tone of voice, and we say, do I have some control using these tools? Do I have some control over how what kind of emotions my message is associated with. Positive emotions will always accompany an open mind and receptiveness. Okay. Now, so when we come back, let's get into another level of this, more having to do with how the brain functions and tie this all together.
Okay. Discussing communication this week, always a good topic, and maybe using your head a little bit more than using your emotions so much, and maybe there's even chemical reasons for some of these emotions. We'll get into that. If people are struggling in their marriage, they need help communicating better, or any area of counseling, how do they get in touch with you, Daniel?
Yes, the phone number is 425-778-6169, 425-778-6169. Offices in Edmonds and Kirkland. Still seeing people in person, also doing a lot of Skype. People also email me through the website, BibleBasedCounselor.com.
Okay, back with more of the Sound Mind broadcast with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor in just a moment.
Hi, this is Daniel Pryor, counselor and life coach. Where marriage is concerned, an ounce of prevention is worth a lot more than a pound of cure. Too many couples start off with misconceptions and then wait until the damage is done to seek counsel. As a marriage counselor, I help couples understand both the purpose and process of marriage, and I teach essential tools of communion. If you're married or thinking about marriage and want to get started right, contact me through my website at BibleBasedCounselor.com or call me at 425-778-6169.
Hello, this is Daniel Pryor, host of the Sound Mind broadcast show here on KCIS. Right now I'm doing a lot of Skype counseling, and this is a great way to get counseling in this time. So if that interests you, give me a call at 425-778-6169, 425-778-6169. 6169, or contact me through my website, BibleBasedCounselor.com.
Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Along with co-host Mark Holland this week, looking at communication. Communication is so important in our interpersonal relationships, maybe particularly if you're married. And Daniel has some great insights talking about using your head, though, a little bit more, or recognizing maybe that some of these things, even emotional responses, maybe are based in some physical functions.
Yeah, so the limbic system in our brain has to do with our emotions. And so since emotions, they exist in the limbic system, largely as responses to inputs from our sensory neural pathways, that being true, access to positive emotions in communication have to be through the senses. So these positive emotions have to be accessed through or solicited or effectuated through the senses. And we're talking about sight, smell, sound, taste, and touch. So there are really no other direct doorways or pathways through which you can engage the reality of another person. So we talked earlier about how that in communicating, we are trying to challenge the other person's beliefs, or we're trying to solicit good emotions, or attach our message or associate our message with positive emotions. And those emotions, as I say here, those emotions are arise, let's say, out of information that we get through our five senses. Now we're going to talk a little bit about how we can utilize those five senses along with the communication tools,
okay,
in order to actually put our message to the other person in such a way that the message is associated with calm, safety, and security. So think about the senses, how they can be utilized in conversation. Think of the communication tools. We had timing, we had words, we had tone of voice, we had facial expression, and we had body posture. Now, some of these clearly access the emotions through the visual and the auditory neural pathways. For example, the words I use and my tone of voice accesses emotions, causes emotions through the auditory pathway. My facial expression and my body posture, that can solicit or even effectuate a positive or negative emotion through the visual pathways. A person sees me, going for a crowbar, or, it's going to have a certain emotional effect on them, whereas if they see me relaxed and sitting down, as a matter of fact, when our daughter was in her teen years, we went through that period of time where the parting of the ways, the generation gap increasing. And I just wanted a way to communicate with her, and talked with my wife about it, and kind of came to an understanding. I could kind of see hearing my wife express her experience of conversations with me and observing conversations between myself and my daughter, that my daughter didn't feel like she had a voice in the conversation. So one of the things that I learned I needed to do was to be sitting down, because she's quite a bit shorter than I am. So I needed to be sitting down, narrow my shoulders, lower my voice, speak softly, and that would give her a sense of safety and security. In other words, it would solicit calm emotions and more pleasant emotions. Now, what about olfactory, though? Pathway.
Now,
that's through my nose.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so that doesn't seem to be quite as useful, perhaps. But still, I mean, if you've ever had a conversation or an argument with a person that had a bad case of halitosis, bad breath. Okay?
Bad breath.
All right.
Or B.O.
A friend of mine, his dad used to say halitosis is better than no breath at all.
Okay.
But if you've ever had a conversation with a person like that, I can bet it wasn't one of your favorite conversations, and I doubt that you were likely persuaded to acquiesce to that person's viewpoint.
Well, you might just to get away from them.
You might just to get away from them. Well, that wouldn't exactly be acquiescing to their view. But, I mean, it would be agreeing to disagree. Well, yeah.
Okay.
I would think in a situation like that, I could maybe be convinced, but most of it would be me convincing myself because as you say, maybe just to get away from the conversation. Better would be the recollection of a conversation that had taken place in a rose garden or on the seashore, or in a favorite restaurant where you have these pleasing fragrances and aromas wafting. And so, speaking of restaurants, in fact, the sense of taste also can be an ally in conversation. I'm sure you've experienced how that some of the most productive, pleasant conversations and even arguments have taken place over a delicious meal or a good cup of coffee.
Mm-hmm. Seems something about dining, having a meal together is very conducive to good conversation. Mm-hmm. I guess it can devolve into an argument too, but mm-hmm. it
In which case you leave,
right?
Or something. Uh-huh. You don't even digest your food as correctly. But yeah, it has that tendency. Well, not all these are you know, maybe a sure thing, but you know, I'd say pastors are good at this. Church that we went to, if the pastor had something hard to say to you, a hard saying, he would take you out for breakfast.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Or down to Starbucks. Uh-huh. You know, so something about the aroma of the coffee, and, you know, it's just relaxing. Mm-hmm. But it's a good thing. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have a difficult conversation, and I say, can I get you a cup of coffee or a cup of tea?
How about a donut?
Yeah, something like that. So this knowledge of how these things can work together. Oh, we skipped one. Touch. Mm-hmm. That was the last one. Mm-hmm. I've skipped down my notes here. Okay. I apologize. So you probably have to watch out on this one a little bit, because I think touching can seem manipulative. I've suggested touch to couples. My wife and I somehow stumbled upon this, and I think I've mentioned it at least a couple of times on radio shows. Touching is the key.
You said if things are getting heated, you reach out and hold hands.
Yeah, and it was really important in like after we had been married for probably 10 or 15 years, maybe 10 or 15 years, when we started to realize that we just how much we argued and how much time it wasted, and so we were really trying to make headway into being on the same page and being of one accord, and then we just kind of I forget who suggested it or how or why. But it just seemed like she was more of a hand-holding person than I was, so it was probably her idea. But we just realized that, yeah, you can't hold that person's hand. Well, if they're squeezing hard and trying to be abusive, but if you're holding that person's hand, it's hard, if even possible, to remain angry. And what's actually happening is that touch, assuming that it's a gentle touch and that it's heartfelt, that touch is actually communicating to your brain. And we talked a couple of weeks ago about how in a situation like that, and this maybe applies to all of this, where does your brain assign the experience of good emotions? It doesn't keep them in the brain. It assigns the experience of emotion down into your heart area. And so we talk about having a broken heart or having, you know, healing your heart and those kinds of things. So these emotions that we feel, these good emotions we're talking about and trying to solicit, as a side comment almost, it's not really connected with what we're saying here, but it's important, you know, that these, you know, the touch, the emotions that are solicited by these senses, sight, touch, smell, hearing, and taste, they are assigned, the good emotions are assigned to the heart area. The knowledge of how these work together, whether we're speaking or listening to another person, we can use these, is going to help us to have a better communication. So this is just has just been a more in-depth look at how really purposeful use of the communication tools, and actually also considering how the brain works, is going to help us to be much more effective in our communication. So that should be a good news for and helpful to married couples if you put it to use. Yeah.
Okay, if you're listening today and you are having some difficulty communicating in your marriage or some relationship, you need some help, some guidance, some counseling, Bible-based counselor is at your disposal. How do people get in touch with you, Daniel?
425-778-6169, 425-778-6169. People also email me through the website, BibleBasedCounselor.com. You're going to find these radio shows there as podcasts. I'm doing Skype counseling as well as in-office counseling. Offices are at Edmonds and Kirkland.
Okay, always great stuff. Sound Mind broadcast with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor on KCIS.
You've been listening to Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. To make an appointment, call 425-778-6169. Be sure to tune in each Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. for Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor.